From health and wellness to education,
we need to be thinking about what it takes for students to succeed.
From art and politics to social issues of the day,
we have young Black males who are thriving in their communities and who are being shown as leaders.
The journey is what matters.
I would say to all of us, we can be better than we are.
Let's join Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, president of Howard University, and his guests as they take steps on the journey.
Hello and welcome to The Journey. I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick, and my guest today is Dr. Clive Callender. He is a surgeon and professor of surgery in the Department of Surgery at Howard University College of Medicine. He also is the former chairman of the department and the first LaSalle D. LaFall Jr. Professor of Surgery at the Howard University College of Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Callender.
Thank you very much for letting me join you.
Oh, my pleasure. So, Dr. Callender, you were born back on November 16, 1936 in New York. Tell me a little bit about your early childhood.
Well, it's interesting that you should ask, because I was thinking of the fact that my mother's name is Ida, and actually she died giving birth to me and my twin brother, Carl. And as I think of the fact that she wanted to broaden her family, I had two brothers, but they died. And so I had two sisters, and so she wanted to have two boys, and that was her dream. And so, actually, her dream came true. She had twins, but she died at the same time we were born.
So your twin brother Carl, and this is an identical twin. I've had the pleasure of meeting him and confusing the two of you still to this day. Tell me a little bit about him. What does he do currently? What has he done?
He's been spectacular in terms of his journey, as you call it, because he went from becoming a high school dropout and then going to the Army, and then after the Army, getting a high school certificate, and then finally becoming a judge in Brooklyn, New York. And his life journey is very, very, very similar to mine.
Now, you received your BS degree in chemistry and physiology from New York City's Hunter College and received your MD degree from Meharry Medical College. There's a lot of conversation these days about historically Black colleges and universities. And as of this past May 2014, you also received an honorary degree from Howard University. With that in mind, what is your perspective based on the education you received at Meharry and your time that you have spent here at Howard in terms of the role of historically Black colleges and universities and training?
Well, in many ways, going to a historically Black college was an eye-opener for me because I attended all the public schools at New York City and finished Hunter College, which was at that time about 97% Jewish and maybe about 1% Black. So I thought I had understood what was going on at Hunter College until I went to Meharry. And then when I went to Meharry and really got to historically Black college, I realized that I actually had been being victimized, but wasn't aware of it. And so it was spectacular to see the difference in terms of what transpired at Hunter and how different it was at Meharry and then later on at Howard. So I think it's very important for all people of our ethnicity and our hue to really attend historically Black colleges, because it is an eye-opener, as I call it, because my eyes were open to many things that I had no knowledge of. So I think it was an important thing to happen in my life. And I realized at that point that I wanted to give back as a medical missionary, but I also wanted to give back to my ethnic group in the United States of America.
Speaking of medical missionary work, back in 1970, you were invited to Nigeria's Port Harcourt General Hospital at the end of the country's Biafran Civil War, where you spent about 9 months. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, because you fulfilled a life dream.
What an exciting period of time. The Civil War had just ended, and there were many residuals of the Civil War, including the military government. But what was most striking was the fact that actually I lost 40 pounds, and I got an opportunity to help many, many people. And the exciting part of it was that when I was there, the people appreciated everything I did. So to be at the foundation of the reopening of Port Harcourt General's Hospital was something that I will forever be indebted to Nigeria for, because it was my first administrative experience and an opportunity for me to be a surgeon, to be a medical missionary, which was my life's dream. At the age of 7, I wanted to become a medical missionary. So this then was the fulfillment of my life's dream.
And what types of cases did you do while you were there throughout that 9 months?
I did all kinds of cases, you name it, from head to toe. One thing about being a general surgeon in Africa, you're truly a general surgeon. Probably one of my most momentous cases was a guy who had a sarcoma of the jaw, adamantinoma, I believe it was. And so I had to take out his jaw and replace it with a rib. And so I did it with an Egyptian surgeon along with me. And that was very successful. And it was many of the exciting opportunities that I got in Africa.
Yeah, absolutely fascinating. You then came back to the United States and in 1971 received a 2-year postdoctoral fellowship through the National Institutes of Health to study organ transplant medicine. At that time, in 1971, that must have been a very unusual appointment. How did that come to be and what transpired subsequent to that?
Well, it's interesting because that really, I got the introduction to that at Freedman's Hospital, because NIH was looking for an opportunity to get more African-Americans involved in research. And I had finished my general surgery training, but I really wasn't that challenged by general surgery. I felt I needed to have more, something more than just general surgery. And so before I went back for my final trip to Africa, I decided that I would like to do something in a field that was new and transplant was new. And so I got the opportunity to get this 2-year fully paid for transplant fellowship at the University of Minnesota. And so that happened because of my Freedman's Hospital and my exposure. And so therefore, as soon as I finished my rotation, my second tour in Africa, I only lost 20 pounds this time. Then I went to Minnesota and started my transplant fellowship.
All right. Looking at the obstacles in transplant medicine, you have often said that the first thing that struck you was the scarcity of available organs for African Americans. Tell me what that revelation was like initially and what that spurred you on to then do about it.
Well, one of the first things that occurred to me was that if at the time, while we represented more than 60% of the people who were actually waiting for transplants, we only represented maybe 3% of those people who were donors. And it occurred to me that if we continue to have this dichotomy, that maybe we wouldn't be able to get organs in the future if we didn't become donors as well. And so this fear kind of motivated me to do everything in my power to help to address what is the number one problem in transplantation today and has always been, which is the shortage of donors. But what I wanted to address was the shortage of African-American donors. And with that in mind, I decided to start a venture into trying to close the gap and to get minorities involved in transplantation. Because of my spiritual background, I felt that the church should be the venue through which we should close the gap. And so from that point up until this time, I addressed that seemingly impossible task to get minorities involved in donors in donation, especially African Americans. And at the time, they said African Americans would never donate. That was the challenge. So it's exciting to me to look back at it now and to see another impossible dream come true. My first impossible dream was going to Africa as a medical missionary. My second was actually taking on this impossible task of increasing donation rates. And as a matter of fact, from the time we started our efforts in the 70s up until now, the number of African-American donors have increased from 8 organ donors per million to more than 50 organ donors per million in the African-American community. The minority community itself increased its donation rates from 15% to more than 30%. And we only make up 25% of the population. So this then was another miracle that I had been involved with. And as you and I have talked about the journey leading to where God wants us to end up, It was exciting to me because first my mission, I thought my mission to be a medical missionary, but then lo and behold, God had something else in plan for me. And lo and behold, this miracle of MOTEP, the National Minority Organ Tissue Transplant Education Program, resulted in us in the African American community being the lead community in change in an arena in which blacks were said not to be able to make a difference. And lo and behold, we've made a magnificent, monumental difference.
Now, to talk, you mentioned MOTEP, the National Minority Organ Tissue Transplant Education Program, which you founded in 1991. In 1995, the National Institutes of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases awarded MOTEP a $5.8 million grant to expand into 50 new cities. At your largest impact, how many cities were you in? And maybe you can describe a few of the activities MOTEP undertook.
Well, we were involved. We had a grant, I guess, for 10 years that allowed us to get into 15 cities, which were funded. And then we had probably about 5 to 10 more, which were unfunded. So that we had the opportunity to make a difference and to get the message out to the African-American community. And this was a difference that I felt was spectacular and something that most thought was impossible. 20 people die every single day because of the shortage of donors. Most of those people who are dying are minorities, and a third of them are African Americans. And so this is an issue that particularly involves us. Because of our predilection to hypertension and diabetes, 60% of the people who are waiting for organs are minorities. And of all the minorities, African Americans are more involved. Now, remember, though, that the number one problem in transplantation way back in the 70s and now is the shortage of donors. And this shortage of donors is something that I'm thrilled to show that the African-American community has led the way in increasing minority donation rates. And most importantly, because of the support from Howard University. Without that support, I couldn't go all across the country and make a difference that has been made.
Now, speaking of going all across the country, you have served as a spokesperson for organ donation at more than 1,000 meetings, a number of numerous professional societies, authored over 125 scientific publications on transplantation. Your own personal imprint on this issue is clear in terms of what you have done. How does that legacy get carried on in a way that will continue to fulfill the journey that you spoke of so that we will not come to a complete destination stop as you wind your own career down?
What a question. Well, I would say to you that when I first started this campaign, somebody said to me, you know, what you're doing is nice, but it's only going to work as long as you're there. And so MOTEP has demonstrated that it's not all about me and that we have a program that may be self-perpetuating. Now, I'm pleased to say that the next leader of MOTEP is likely to be Keith Melanson, who is a transplant surgeon. And so that I'm passing the torch on. But I believe that legacy is ongoing. Primarily because of MOTEP exists at Howard University. MOTEP exists at sites across the country. And I think that the legacy of what we've talked about with community education and empowerment and this powerful tool, I believe that this legacy will go on and that this destination will not be a journey that we led to, a destination that stopped because I left.
For our listeners, as we wrap up, what are some of the key steps that someone listening today can take to ensure that they participate in organ donation? And if they don't, at least they get their communities involved in doing it. What can they do? Can they go to DMV and sign up? Do they have to come to a hospital to sign up? Can you give our listeners some advice?
Yes, there are registries in every state now. And one of the best ways to do is get on the organ donor registry and indicate you want to be a donor. Now, that's important because while we usually talk about signing donor cards, having family discussions, if you actually sign up on the registry, whether your family likes it or not, that then becomes the law. And so sign an organ donor card, have a family discussion. More importantly, get on the registry so that others may take advantage of the second chance at life. So the blind may see, the deaf can hear again, and those who would otherwise die may have a second chance at life.
You Just heard from one of the most illustrious surgeons of our time, Dr. Clive Callender. Thank you again for joining us here on The Journey.
It's been my pleasure.
I'm Dr. Wayne Frederick. I look forward to you joining me next time on The Journey.
You've been listening to The Journey with Dr. Wayne A.I. Frederick, right here on the Howard University Radio Network.